audiences have fallen in love with cabaret singer Julie Cassiopo on season 9 of Alt for Norge, the great Norwegian adventure reality TV show where 12 Americans of Norwegian descent eat fish eyeballs, clean latrines, and retrace their roots back to Norway.
Julie's kooky sensibilities endeared her to audiences and won over my heart. Spoiler alert, it was heartbreaking to see Julie go home, since she provided much levity to the intense competition.
Today, the great Norwegian adventure continues as Julie Cassiopo joins us to chat about Seattle's drag and performance scene, how to let loose in conservative surroundings, and her unconventional singing techniques to invite prosperity into your life.
Plus, Julie's wild, wild time at the Indian guru Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh's ashram, as featured in the Netflix hit documentary Wild, Wild Country.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Feast of Fun is made possible because of fabulous people just like you. Thank you. Become a member and support this show at feastoffun.com/plus.
Hello, this is Julie.
I'm falling in love with Julie. She's such a fabulous dame. Hi, Julie.
Hi, Julie.
I love that.
Oh, we have more songs for you. Do you have songs for us?
Oh.
Yeah, I wrote another one for you for your cabaret act.
Oh, great. What is it?
I used to visit all the Norway places, those come what may places,
oh,
where
great.
One relaxes on the axis of the wheel of life to get the feel of life from lutefisk and aquavit.
Oh! I love it.
My apologies to Billy Strayhorn, who wrote Lush Life at the tender age of 16.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
I know. Could you imagine?
Wow. Well, you know, this is one of the songs I'm adding to my repertoire for Thursday night.
Are you really?
Oh, yeah.
Lush Life or my version of it?
Your version. I'm going to add it because I like that. Because, you know, I'm billing my show as my Norwegian repertoire, which means the songs I'll sing in Norway.
Ah, that's a good one.
And so, yes, well, maybe we can elaborate on those lyrics a little at some other point.
Make them a little more Norwegian.
Yeah.
Or as I like to say, Norwegian.
Oh my God, I had no idea you were so wacky.
Oh, I think you did. I think you did. Julie, when did you first fall in love with me in Norway?
God. Let me see. Well, it was... I think it was pretty much when I first met you at the airport, you know, because I just thought, oh, good, a kindred spirit. There's somebody here who I can relate to.
Well, I was so excited to see you walk into the airport because you're wearing that beautiful leopard spotted coat and you just came in singing. You serenaded all of us. And I feel like people don't serenade each other anymore like they used to. I feel like back in the day we used to sing to each other more.
There used to be music in this house. What happened to the music?
Yeah, serenading. We should start. I could start that as a new trend.
Yeah.
Serenade people.
Maybe you could develop an app for that.
Well, you know something? That's how I made my Australian boyfriend fall in love with me as I sang this song to him. And it was like, it was all over then, you know? It was like, wow. But I don't take advantage of that because that can be, you know, misused.
So, Julie, you've been a cabaret artist for quite some time. And quite a few drag queens have been inspired by your work.
Well, actually, I was first attracted to drag queens because my older brother used to drag me to all the gay bars.
Ooh.
And that's where I got all my ideas, you know, seeing these guys. This was back in the, you know, 70s when I was still, you know, just a teenager. And I was going, wow, I want to do this, but for real. You know,
was this in Seattle, Washington, or was it
yes.
another city? So you've always been in Seattle.
Yes, I was born and bred here.
Well, Seattle's a huge center population for people of Norwegian ancestry.
And a lot of people are familiar with Jinx Monsoon and Ben De La Creme, who come from the Seattle. Seattle has a great theater scene, but also a very do-it-yourself performance art scene where people are, it's very commonplace to have five or six one-person shows showing in the same neighborhood all at the same time.
Yeah, really? Sounds like you've done your homework.
Baby, I've been to Seattle. I've seen the shows in person. And the thing about, you know, what I really love about the Seattle theater scene is just how much support and enthusiasm there is for people to write and create their own work for an audience.
Yeah.
And you came from that that bubbling brew of creativity.
Yes, you know, and I also have written several one-woman shows myself and performed them at Bumbershoot. And there was a gay bar here called Thumpers that was very supportive. Did you ever hear of it?
No, but I do like the name Thumpers. It you know, brings a lot to mind, that's for sure.
I've always had a crush on Bambi's furry little friend.
Well, in some ways, you kind of do drag yourself because you've you have a character that you do that's a dude.
Yeah, I do a, what do they call that? Male drag or drag king.
Yeah. Drag king, yes.
But, you know, describing your sensibility, you know, how, like I'm looking at your social media profiles and half of the photos you have, you're wearing a wig, you have a heightened feminine sensibility, and you certainly, you know, have influenced many drag queens like
Dina Martina.
And drag queens that influenced you.
What?
Well, you know, the Dina Martina thing, I got to tell you, he used to be in a like a troupe with people who did improv. So they, after their class, which was down at the Pike Place Market, they'd stumble into the bar where I was singing, the Pink Door. And so they'd be there and they, and it was always fun to have them there because they had such, you know, good senses of humor. And I really didn't know who they were at the time because I was so popular. I didn't have time to get to know people.
I was too famous to notice the little people in my town.
I was really going riding high, you know. Mm-hmm.
But you developed a friendship with Dina.
Yes, I have over the years. In fact, I'd like to reconnect with him. I think he's going to do another show. I think he's suddenly lost weight. unless he did photoshopping on his pictures, he looks like.
Well, I noticed that a lot of the drag queens from the Provincetown scene, and Dina Martina is one of them, and Surly Varla, Jean Merman, this past couple of years, they've been getting hit in the gym. Mm. And everyone's like, oh, my God, there's a man underneath that dress. And everyone's kind of shocked. And I'm like, well, what did you expect? That's the whole point of being a drag queen, is a transformation.
Yeah, really. Well, why are they hitting the gym?
Because, you know, muscle is the new drag, I guess. It's like they're sort of like wanting to have it all. I think for at least in my generation, we dressed up in drag to rebel. And theater was a way to fight the system. Mm-hmm. And to tell your story was a way to empower yourself. Was that the case for you?
Well, I like to wear masks, especially after watching the fourth episode of Alt for Norga. I went, oh, my God, I needed a makeup artist. You know, that was not fair. That was.
felt like they were the camera and lighting was transphobic.
Well, I don't think they really knew how to get a, they weren't interested in getting a good angle and showing my best side. You know what I mean?
They just showed my backside. So I kind of, my little butt crack. So, you know, I know they're feeling, Julie, but I think you looked great. Yeah. I think that the show is shot beautifully and you come off as, you know, fun and kooky, but also, you know, graceful, elegant and very insightful.
And so for people who are listening right now who may not be familiar because, you know, there are a majority of Americans who don't have Norwegian reality television, you can listen to it. You can watch the show. Mm-hmm. Dplay.no, which sounds like a porn site, like Dick Play. No. Dplay.no. And then you search for Alt for Norga and you can see Mark and Julie and their sort of motley crew of Norwegian Americans retrace their steps by eating fish eyeballs and cleaning latrines.
Right. They were sheep's eyeballs.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, how were those eyeballs?
Well, I was eating sweet potatoes or something, but everybody else was trying to roll one around and they thought they'd get points for that.
I think we got some points, you know. Julie is a pescatarian, so she didn't eat that. Yeah. We made omelets for them instead.
Now, Julie, and I'm observing this and watching you and Mark on the show, there seems to be this undercurrent that if you do well on something, it'll make the producers think twice about sending you home. In hindsight, do you think that assessment was accurate?
No, it was very inaccurate because I think they just wanted you to be who you really were. And so, you know, that's why when I had to clean the outhouse, I thought, well, you know, my first reaction was, oh, this is like an insult to my core, you know, like this isn't really funny. It's just, you know, kind of a very menial position they're putting me in. And, they explained it wasn't really, I wasn't really cleaning it. It had just bark in it, a tree bark, and it looked like crap, but you know, but so I thought, well, I'm going to do whatever they want me to do because I want to be a winner, you know?
Well, and Norwegians value public service and humility.
Oh, they do. Yeah.
And so that was a way of ingratiating yourself with the audience.
Well, and that was the whole point of that episode was we did the Duke Nod, which is community service and our community service. And I was proud to serve on the team with you, Julie. It was to help clean that toilet. And I did get rid of all the spiders. So when you actually got down to work to scrub it, it was spider free. Yeah.
Well, you know, I was impressed with all the work you did digging up those heavy rocks and stuff. I mean, but you know what I learned about myself is that I really don't like to work very hard.
You know, I'm the same way. Is that a Norwegian thing?
What?
I think so. Well, I think it's something that some people really like to work and get their hands dirty, but you do like to work.
I do like to work.
Well, hold on a second. So is this community service thing, isn't that something that they give people who commit crimes? Or is that like, is that expected of everybody?
Well, they like to have mutual support. So, no, it's not about criminals.
No, it's, you know, we have the same kind of thing here in Chicago is like people go in at the end of the season, they clean up the beaches, get rid of stuff. You know, people will go to fields together or they'll work on community farms, that kind of thing, you know.
And if you're trying to impress your bosses at like the, you know, heartless corporate giant that you work for in the United States, every now and then they have like, let's clean the park. And so you want to sort of participate because it builds community in your work environment. But it also shows the people who are considering somebody for promotion that you're somebody who's very selfless.
And also it was a very special experience for us, too, is like we worked with a family and there was four generations of that family. It was a young daughter, her mother, her mother, and then her mother. You know, all these women had kids at the age of like 16 or something. I swear to God, because they were all so young.
Mark, can you explain to the audience who may not have seen it? Like this family was the role where there were fishermen.
This family was a family that lived in this small community, and they had this toilet for the beach there, and so the kids were swimming at the beach, and so they were all involved. And one of the people in the family is a fisher person, and that was
you say fisher person because she's
the mother.
She's a woman who works full time as a fisher man.
Yeah, I guess.
And I don't think there's no man involved either. Did you notice that?
I think there was a husband somewhere along, wasn't there? No, there
was. So it was female fishery.
Yeah. No, only one woman was a fisher person. Okay. And she goes out to sea for like 3 weeks at a time, 4 weeks at a time. And I was talking to the Norwegian guys. I said, well, that'd be very unusual in the United States. And they're like, it's very unusual here, too.
I mean, it's a different, you know, we've all seen those films where everybody dies at the end. Yeah. Like, you know, and it's like, you know, fishing is hard. Imagine in American waters. We're talking like Norwegian waters where it's brutally cold and dark most of the year.
Yeah. They also have the Gulf Stream, though, so there is some.
So it's more temperate than you think.
Than you'd think, yeah. I mean, people live in up by the Arctic Circle relatively comfortably up in Norway because of the Gulf Stream.
Julie, a lot of reality TV show contestants always have this duality where they're accused of being superficial or selfish because they got on a reality TV show to get attention, to be on TV. There, you know, in The Bachelor, they say the wrong reasons, and the and the right reasons to get on a reality TV show is to fall in love or to retrace your Norwegian ancestry. Now, there's a third option here, which is for people like you and Mark, and certainly Kirsten and Kelsey. You guys are involved in creating content and in performing and entertaining an audience. And I would imagine that being involved in somebody else's production on this heightened level certainly had an influence on you as an artist. Did it not?
Yes. Yes. It was nice to have somebody else be in control and I didn't have to, you know, call all the shots.
So it was nice to bottom for a change.
Yeah. And I'm used to being on top.
Well, what were the reasons for you like to get on Alt for Norge besides retracing your ancestry and being on television?
Well, I just wanted to go to Norway and I really couldn't see, you know, I wanted to go there to sing in the jazz festival. And when that fell through, I thought, well, I'm not going to let that stop me. I'm going to get to Norway some way, you know? So I just had this obsession. Like once I get an idea in my head, I go, I am going to get to Norway. And then sometimes I'd stop and think, well, why do you really even want to go there? You know, it's not that I have anything to do there, you know? You know, if I don't have a gig, I don't really like to go places unless I have, you know, some nice, really generous friend. You know, paying the bill.
Man, Julie, you and I are cut from the same cloth.
So also I thought, well, maybe this will help me get my foot in the door, you know, because I thought this way people will kind of get a feel for me that I'm serious because I have been knocking on a few doors there, you know, jazz festivals. And I know a billionaire there by the name of Kjell Inge Røkke. I sang for him in Seattle. When he used to live here and he had a big party and I got asked to sing at it at the Four Seasons. And that, and then I told him how I wanted to go to Molde because that's where he's from and that's where my grandmother's from. And I, and so he kind of got me going. He goes, well, let's make it happen. And then he gave me a good recommendation at the jazz festival, but they never, they still, that wasn't enough, you know? And they, the jazz festival even called me and they said, well, do you think he'll, you know, show up if you're performing here? And I said, well, I don't know. I really don't know, but I imagine he would, but you have to request me and then we will request from him to sponsor me. but you know, I can't ask him to sponsor me if I don't have a gig there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Without
and,
a
and
doubt.
Also I wanted them to sponsor me. You know, I wanted, I mean, I wanted that jazz festival to do it. I didn't want to have to do it, you know, because it's not very, you know, comfortable asking for money directly.
Well, you know, it's interesting because we're used to RuPaul's Drag Race here in the United States where, and, you know, even though it just won the Emmy for best reality TV show in the United States.
And competition and host.
And host. Wow. For congratulations, RuPaul and the producers. Wow. Alt for Norge last year won their equivalent of the same award. So in a lot of ways, Alt for Norge and RuPaul's Drag Race are the equivalent of each culture and its manifestation currently. And, you know, Alt for Norge is, you know, like Norwegians are not like booking every single contestant. And we all went to Minneapolis and, you know, out of the, you know, stayed in people's houses and it was just, you know, an opportunity to get everybody back together and, and sort of follow up and process the experience. And, you know, as the husband to one of the contestants, I felt like there was a lot of, there was another undercurrent of frustration and, disappointment that the experience wasn't what they hoped it would be.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I was kind of glad I got sent home after 3 weeks because I realized that's about my limit because I used to do these hotel gigs in all over the world. And sometimes I stayed months and that was really hard on me because after 3 weeks, the novelty of staying in a luxury hotel wears off. And then you're stuck with what am I doing here? You know, especially if it isn't really a dynamic, you know, at least when you're home, you can do anything you want. But when you're in a foreign country, you know, you're really limited because, you know, if you're trying to work there and your job is sort of prescribed, you know, like singing every night in the hotel bar, it's like, I don't know. It was just, you know, it's limiting.
But is that why? But you stayed in Paris for 4 years.
Well, Paris was different because that was more like I didn't have a contract, so I was always hustling, and that made it more fun, and I created friendships and relationships, a lot of interesting people there. But like when I go to Istanbul or India or Bali or any of those fun places, you know, there's just you can only do so much, and just like on that trip to Norway, it was like. You know, there was a lot of waiting around, and it was not really a feeling of great satisfaction. You know what I mean? Mm.
Julie, is part of the attraction of being an artist is the busking, is the hustling for the gigs?
I think a little bit. It's somewhat. It's kind of interesting because you know you're just always. I mean, that's what my whole life is about. Is That's how I keep in touch with people is just to invite them to gigs. I mean, that I would otherwise just kind of lose contact with. Mm. And I have a lot of, you know, people on my mailing list. And I really love people. You know, I just love them so much.
And is it hard to, develop a relationship with somebody who's then willing to come see your show?
Yeah. I'll go out for coffee if you'll come and see my show.
Because it's a really interesting thing. Like, sometimes, like, drag queens will criticize me for not seeing their shows. And I'm like, hey, I regularly perform here, too. And you never even set foot near me. And it's like, for you to, like, criticize me for not seeing your show, it's like, you have no interest in mine. So what the fuck is that about, you know? Is there a tit-for-tat thing going on, like, with the cabaret scene in Seattle? Like, is it a situation where... You know, like you want to support your sisters in cabaret and theater. And so the idea is that you're going to spend some time just going to see shows.
I hardly ever do that. Because I am too busy working on my own stuff, you know, and for me to go out at night and nothing is more humiliating to me than there's a jazz festival in town and I'm. You know, not singing at it, you know, because I was abroad so much that I lost some of my momentum here. So I just kind of did more the international thing. So like when people go, oh, let's go to that jazz festival. And I'm thinking, you know, I don't want to see these people. I've seen them before. Just like I don't think people want to see me that often, you know, they've seen me before, you know.
But we have to say, you know, watching Alt for Norge, the great Norwegian adventure show, in different audiences, we had a viewing here in Chicago and in Minneapolis. Hands down, you're the most lovable and definitely most endearing contestant of the season. Next to Mark, of course.
Oh, thank you. You're not just saying that, are you?
No, I'll say that to Kelsey and Kristen, who I absolutely adore, and I'm so we're so lucky that they're in Chicago, because they're both, you know, really strong artists in their own right, who are interested in making things. Mm-hmm. And I think this is like the lament that I notice of a lot of girls who get on Drag Race, for example, is that they're so spread apart geographically. The only time they get to sort of collaborate or do something together, if they ever are lucky enough to be booked on a show. And now with 100, RuPaul says 140 drag queens are out in the wild. And I imagine that as future seasons of this show and other shows, we just as Americans and just as the world, we're super soaked with reality TV show contestants. And it's not that noteworthy or extraordinary anymore to even win a season, much less be on a show.
I know. But I get a lot of, you know, it's a fun thing to tell people that I was on it. People go, wow, you're kidding.
It's such a weird thing. It's like people, they don't believe it. But back to like what Fausto said about you and like everybody just when you delivered a line, everybody laughed. People thought you were wonderful and funny and charming.
Oh, what a cool breeze.
I got to tell you. It made some of the other contestants very jealous that you got all those. Oh, yes. You can see it on their faces.
Really? Like, who,
and I'm like, that's my gal pal, Julie.
Like, who got jealous? You know, I want to know.
I was a little jealous because they showed in the first episode or the second episode, Isaac holding your hand, taking up the mountain. And I'm like, who held your hand first, Julie? Tell the audience. It was me.
It was you. Yeah, you're dragging me down
the streets of Bergen.
Yes.
On our amazing race style treasure hunt.
Oh, yeah. That was a scavenger hunt, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I guess the premise was that you guys both were giving rocks.
That's another one.
Oh, okay. This is another one.
The first one is we had the first episode. You know, unfortunately, our team did not do well. We came in last, and unfortunately, we were up for elimination. But there was four of us, and Julie, congratulations on making it through. Julie, whatever you're doing right now, are you opening up soda cans and pops? Are you cleaning out the silverware drawer? What are you doing?
Oh, no, I'm trying to get some plastic silverware together for a picnic.
If you could do that later, I'd appreciate it. It's very distracting.
I'm sorry.
Who are you going on a picnic with?
Oh, I do them every Monday night.
Oh.
With your special Australian boyfriend?
In the garden. We have a little garden here. Pea patch, it's called.
Oh.
And we grow vegetables. And then we give them to the food banks.
I want to go on a picnic with Julie.
Oh, I know. I wish you guys would come out here sometime.
Listen, if any of the clubs want us to do a live podcast from Seattle, we're more than happy to do so.
So anyway, I'll get back to the it was a scavenger hunt, and unfortunately, Julie and I, you know, we're a little bit older than the other two people in our group, and they were very energetic and very rah rah rah. And Julie and I were just trying, in many ways, just to keep up with them. But because they were such rah rah rah, we lost our direction and ended up coming in.
I know
in
they
last.
Didn't even know what they were doing.
Yeah, and you know, so anyway, we were up for elimination, and I answered a question wrong, and it was a 50-50 question, and so she got the opportunity to answer it. And you're like, I will answer that, and then she got safe. And
well, you
luckily,
know, the thing is, I remember my Norwegian grandmother, and she just did not ever try to interact with anybody, you know, in terms of strangers on a bus or something. Yeah. And you know,
for people that hadn't seen it, the question was something along the lines of about would Norwegians put their bag on the seat next to them when they're on the bus. And I said they wouldn't because Norwegians always seem very nice to me. Plus, I don't remember seeing a sign on the bus that says don't put your suitcase next to you, that kind of thing. And also, you know, my dad who was Norwegian American. He used to pick up hitchhikers with us little kids in the car. You know, I don't know.
So it seemed very out of character.
I saw it on YouTube talking about cultural things of Norway, and they said people on buses, they do not strike up a conversation with them because they do not like that to happen, and they will never start one with you. They'll talk to you, they'll respond to you, but they will never start one.
Well, the humanitarian crisis that is unfolding in, you know, in Eastern Europe and the Middle East has introduced a lot of people to these Scandinavian countries as immigrants. And I can imagine that is certainly challenging them culturally in a way they've never been challenged before.
Oh, yeah. But I'm talking about the old days, too. But you know, if you're part of their community, they're like that small place we were, that Urka, that was they were kind of more warm-hearted, but you know, there was still a certain amount of coolness about them. Did you notice?
Oh yeah, that's the Norwegian trait, right? Is there's a certain amount of reserve. They don't hold back. They're not overly emotional. They're not going to run up to you like, oh my God, it's so good to see you, and hug you. I think maybe it's changing with some of the younger generations as they're more introduced to American culture and television and movies. But that's kind of the thing. It's like, it's literally like it would just absolutely pain them to ask like a stranger or something, or to have to be forced into a conversation with a stranger. It's almost like it's a form of, like, you know, we would describe it maybe as social anxiety.
So with the fact that both of you guys, all of you guys were given all these challenges where you have to interrupt strangers and ask people that you don't know for questions and stuff, that scene made you guys stick out like sore thumbs as Americans.
Well, the thing about Norwegians, though, there are some exceptions to ask, like talking to them. You're allowed to ask people for directions on the street. Like, that's what it is. As long as you don't, like, ask them, like, how are you doing? What's going on? But directions, absolutely fine. If they have a small pet, you can say, I love your pet, that kind of thing. So there are little exceptions you can get away with. But, you know, we actually, I think we terrified those people when we ran up against them. And we're like, oh, my God, you have hot dogs. Where's the hot dog stand? Because, you know, we had to find a hot dog stand. And they just looked like we were shouting, like, bloody murder at them. Like, you know, like we were accusing them of something, like, burn the witch or something.
But, you know, one thing I didn't care about the show is that everything was so controlled. They're very, Norwegians are very controlling people.
It's about the rules.
Yeah, and so I was hoping to meet someone there, you know, like
fall in love for real,
and fall in love,
get some of that Norwegian D play. Dot yes.
and anyway, we were on it was one of the first things we did. We got on that ferry boat, remember? And we had to buy that Svella. Yeah, and they gave us money to buy some of the sweets that they sell on the ferries. Mm-hmm. Well, I saw this really good looking man who looked like he was wearing a hat, like he works on the farm or something, you know, and he was good looking and real tall. And you know, and we had the TV cameras there and he was kind of looking at us and kind of interested. And I kind of talked to him. I thought, gee, we're about the same height. He's a little taller. And you know, we chatted, but I don't think he spoke English very well, but I definitely got the vibe, like, you know, don't go, you know, go as a group. Everywhere you go, go as a group. Well, I'm solo, you know what I mean? I go everywhere in the world on my own, so I'm not used to, like, come on, everybody, here's a guy. Let's give him a hard time. Maybe he'll fall in love with me.
You should have just invited him to, like, stuck him into the restroom or something, or a little broom closet somewhere.
A tit-a-tet. Is there a Norwegian phrase like that? You know, a rendezvous?
I'm sure you probably say rendezvous or tete-a-tete.
Yeah, but I wish I would have given him my card, but I didn't even give my card out. I felt like it wasn't quite appropriate, you know, like me, you know, hustling behind everybody's back.
Well, they're going to send you home anyways. It's like, you know, might as well hustle, honey.
But that's the thing is, you know, when you look at it in, like, that second episode, like when we are third episode, when we're in Urca, fourth episode, that was the first time we really get to spend a lot of time around Norwegians. The first one was like the first few episodes, it was just, we were such in our own little bubble.
Although I do like that muscular guy who was eating a hot dog in that shot. I noticed him, and Mark's like, did you notice the muscular guy? And I'm like, of course I did.
Which shot was
that? Who was he?
I don't know. They're running down the street, and you're like, hey, look, a hot dog. You know, and Mark says a hot dog. Yeah. And they're all kind of like startled, you know?
Yeah.
And then my poor sweet husband, Isaac, ordered Isaac. a hot dog. And he goes down on an 8-inch hot dog.
I think it was a foot long.
To show off. Mm-hmm. And it goes right into his mouth, down his throat. And then the look of horror on his face, like, I might die right now. And I'm watching this at home. I'm going, I would have been really pissed if I got a phone call from, you know, the production crew going, your husband died choking on a hot dog.
I bit off more than I could chew. But I ended up chewing it anyway.
that Isaac, he was great, though. I mean, he was willing to do anything.
Anything? Now you tell him.
Somebody bet him like $1 to lick the floor, and he licked the floor. He literally would have done anything. I was really disappointed to see him go. Because we were good buddies, you know. We shared a room in Bergen, and we sat up and we drank, and we hung out, and he played his trumpet in the room, and it was really just, it was so much fun to be around, and I'd love to see him again.
Don't think that Alt for Norge is as square as it comes across. It is on the same channel that has shows like X on the Beach.
Oh, right. Where
it's kind of the Norway's version of Jersey Shore, but it's ex-lovers who aren't told they're going to be together, and sparks fly and fists fly, and everybody hates each other, and they angry fuck. Oh.
They had a group of like seven people that they brought over, but including all the exes that would come in and pop in and out of the house, it was like up to like 27 people came.
So you could have said, Isaac, I bet you $20 you can't, you know,
get on X on the beach.
Get into my X
listen,
on the beach.
Listen, if I thought that was, you know, you have to remember when I first came there, though, I had a dog bite. I wasn't feeling very, and it was a serious bite. And it kind of, it put me in a different mind space, you know?
Yeah.
Like, because normally I'm, you know, adventurous and bubbly and jumping around.
And I noticed that you had a hard time when it was a full moon sleeping.
But it's, you know, so in some ways I feel like it kind of brought me down to earth a little bit and maybe appreciated like more of being in the moment, and I better kind of, you know, better just kind of keep it contained. So
yeah.
But, you know, if there was a chance,
sort of,
I would have
cured
it.
That werewolfism, like it. What do they call it when you get bitten by a werewolf?
Lycanthropy.
Oh, yeah.
Are you seeing a doctor about that? Because
okay.
Let me tell you, people, if you think it's sexy being married to a werewolf, he tears everything apart. And his clothes, you know, when he transforms into a, you know, 300-pound werewolf, there goes the jeans, there goes the clothing, and then our poor dog Jesse's like cowering in the corner, peeing in a puddle. It's not easy.
Oh, God.
Julie, the point of Allfarnorge for people is to connect with their Norwegian family. And if you get to all the way to the end, you get 50,000 American dollars and then the chance to meet your Norwegian relatives. And unfortunately, you didn't make it to the end. But
which after taxes, it is 35,000, just to clarify.
Really?
Yeah, well, I calculated
they,
it.
Well, yeah, you know, you have to pay Uncle Sam, right?
Yeah.
So you got a letter telling you about your family.
Well, the letter was very powerful because they were talking about my great-grandmother that I knew nothing about. And nor did my grandmother had been abandoned when she was 5 years old. So it was very interesting because we had never heard from her again. And so they had some information that she'd had two children out of wedlock by two different men. And one of the men was a traveling salesman, and the other guy was a very wealthy man in Olsen, because that's where she originated, was in Olsen. Mm-hmm. And then he had no intention of marrying her. He paid her for the baby, you know, helped support it, give her some money. But so she had a lot of, you know, stigma and shame around her. She had to live with her parents. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine having to live with your parents while you're having a baby?
But wasn't it commonplace to live with your parents in the 1800s anywhere in Europe?
Yeah.
Yeah, but there's a lot of shame involved about having a baby when you're not married.
Sure.
And so are you the descendant of the wealthy person or the traveling salesman?
Oh, that's a good question. I think the first born was a son, and my so that wasn't my grandmother. So my grandmother was the daughter of a traveling salesman. Mm-hmm. But also he had another family. So you know, it's kind of confusing. And Julieta or Henrietta, she was she said she would clarify it.
She's
more.
One of the people that worked on the show. Yeah.
Yeah. But I didn't ever hear from her. And I don't know. It was slightly confusing and a little contrived, I thought, you know.
What do you mean contrived?
Well, like they kind of made it more, you know, salacious than it needed to be. And then she said how the guy who fought the traveling salesman died of syphilis later that year.
Oh, that was in your letter?
Oh my God.
Yes. I'm thinking, thanks. Thanks for sharing the details.
They didn't air that though.
Well, I didn't read it.
Oh my God.
Your actual grandma, like, it was a very mysterious figure in your life then.
Well, she was not my great grandmother was. I never met her, but my grandmother was in my life a lot when growing up.
But I mean, like you asked her, you know, how about her mother, and she'd just be like, "Grandma was a rolling stone. Wherever she knitted a quilt was her." I'm sorry, couldn't help saying that. Sorry.
No, but yeah, that's true. My grandmother was so young when she left, and she I think she was really you know, it's hard to remember, but you know, when you're 5 years old, you remember some things. Remember when you were 5 years old, Fausto?
I remember everything. Absolutely, to the detail, to the point that it's like, are you the devil's child? Like, I remember names and addresses and what was served and all this stuff. And I think the reason I remember my early childhood in such vivid detail was because my father was obsessed with photography at a time when no one had cameras or photographs or and color photo. So we had all these wonderful.
Oh my God, you act like
albums.
You were around and like people were on daguerreotypes or something. Color photos.
Oh, listen, wow. When we were getting all this stuff ready for Alt for Norga, how many color photos of your early childhood did we have?
There's not very many, but there are also not any that are in black and white, except for like maybe like a baby photo.
And all my childhood photos are in color. In fact, the only black and white photos are of me is when I first started doing drag in college. I wanted to get the newspapers to write about you. And in the early 90s, you had to submit black and white photos to the newspapers because they wouldn't run color.
So, Julie, you got this letter from your family. And when you left, they gave you a connection to your family. Have you reconnected with them?
Yes. I've been in touch a little bit. But we have each other's email. And we've been writing a little, but not as much as... I think she probably works and I asked her, I wanted to know more about the relatives that she has, but she hasn't really responded that much.
Are Norwegians on Facebook or something? Or is there like Nord book?
Yeah, they were on Facebook.
They're on Facebook, but I don't think it's as popular in Norway.
But can you like follow each other at the very least and be like her status updates? Like, I'm eating fish eyeballs again today, or you know,
no,
something.
No, I don't even hardly remember. I should go try to do that more.
And my apologies to Norwegians who are listening to this. I'm just, you know, hammering on one specific aspect of the show.
Listen, they know their food is weird. Yeah. They know this.
You know, we were in Minneapolis, and Dana, the long-haired blonde hippie mama, She turns to me and she's like, you would have hated being on Alt for Norge.
And Fausto says, if I was on there with you, I would have.
No, I actually said to her, I was like, you know, it's a show that was perfectly suited for my husband's skills. Me, I would just, you know, turn another shade of pale seeing having to eat, you know, unusual body parts of animals. I think the sheep's head did look delicious because Mark knows how to turn food that is inedible into a gastronomic masterpiece.
Once you remove the skin of the face and you get to the meat underneath, if you just ate the meat, you'd be like, this meat is delicious. If you're a meat eater.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Mark was really good at taking over in the kitchen. I mean, you have no idea, but I actually do have some cooking skills.
Well, yeah, your dad was a sausage maker, right?
Yeah.
This is where the audience goes, ooh.
And he also made beef jerky that people just like went crazy for.
Because your family's half Norwegian and half Sicilian. Is that right?
Yeah, my father's Sicilian.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the Cascopo.
Cascopo. Yeah.
But you say Cassiopeia, don't you?
I say, because that's more musical to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like Cassiopeia, from Clash of the Titans.
Yeah. But anyway, like looking at some of those photographs and I mean, it really humbled me today when I was watching the show. I just went, oh, my God. You know, I need a makeup artist in my life. If I don't have one, I'm not feeling right.
Julie, there's all these videos on YouTube that just show people how to make makeup. There's like there's millions and millions of videos out there. So you just, you know, find one that's right for you.
My makeup artist friend, he taught me all that stuff. But it's like I need someone to do for hair, too. And I should have worn a big wig all the
time. Me too.
You know?
I should have too. I'm so disappointed.
Hindsight is 20/20.
I'm so disappointed I didn't bring a wig. I should have worn a wig the whole time.
That's so when Mark was getting ready to get on Alt for Norge, we had too many friends saying, Mark, you got to get off that airplane full drag. You got to walk down the runway in heels and say, I didn't come here to slay. I came here to play. And I was like, I don't know. They would maybe take one look at him and be like, honey, this RuPaul's Drag Race is that way.
Well, part of the allure of going on Out for Norgo was getting away from everything too, you know?
Yeah. Because
I was just like, you know, it'd be nice, especially, you know, with this current regime, this current presidency and these 24-hour news cycles, I was just like, man, it sure wouldn't be nice to take a break. And, you know, we all need to take a break. I mean, we all have to pay attention, but we all need to know schedule breaks and be like, listen, I've done my share. I've you know, thought about this enough. It's time for somebody else to kind of to pitch in and help get rid of this mushroom cap pianist president. You heard about that, right, Julie?
No.
Stormy Daniels described her sexual relationship with the president and said basically he had pubic hair like the Yeti, and that his penis, while it wasn't like extremely small or freakishly small, it was like less than average, and it had like a weird mushroom head to it.
Ooh.
I don't like the fact that this is setting a precedence of, like, you know, deplorable people come in all shapes and sizes, mm-hmm. and awful people come in all shapes and sizes, and you know, somebody's physicality shouldn't be a place that where people are obsessing over or ridiculing him for, because he's done so many awful things as a human being.
It's making them into what do they call that? It's weird, like demonizing him. Like when there was some kind of weird picture of Trump naked or something, like a cutout, you know, mm-hmm. one of those things. And people were going to get their picture taken with it, making fun of him. And it was, you know, to me, it was very dehumanizing almost, you know, and I don't think he, you know, doing that makes them look worse, you know.
No, it actually it empowers the Republicans and Trump and his, you know, cronies, because they feed off of our desire, our shortcoming desire to dehumanize other people. And when we behave like them, we actually, even though we think we're attacking them, we're actually giving them more power. Mm. The only way. You know, I mean, love is the answer, but also voting is the answer. I mean, you know, Beto O'Rourke is neck and neck with Ted Cruz in Texas.
It's not neck and neck, isn't it? Like 46% to 56%?
Well, other polls say it's about five points away. This poll that just came out today is a 10-point difference, which is pretty scary. Just considering, like, if what everything you've seen so far isn't going to get you to vote against Ted Cruz, nothing will. And it's a point of, like, you know, what are Texans going to do? Because there's so many people in these cities who are just, like, held hostage by the misinformed people who live mm-hmm. in the middle of nowhere, have no access mm-hmm. to other cultures, other people, no access to information, no access to libraries or books. And they're just watching Fox News 24 hours a day and doing whatever they're told by Fox News.
Yeah.
Julia, I wanted to talk to you because I almost forgot. But Foster and I were obsessed with the Netflix documentary Wild, Wild Country, which was covered the controversial, like, Indian guru, the Bhagwan Shri Rajneesh, also known as Osho. And you actually went to his retreat in Pune India.
Yeah, his ashram.
So you were in the Bhagwan's ashram?
Yes.
And what was it like being in the Bhagwan's ashram?
Well,
sounds like
I wasn't
a sexual thing. Was it?
I wasn't living there, but I mean, I was living in a hotel, but you know, and singing in a hotel in India, and so it was really a neat kind of like an oasis, because it's so hot in India, and so this place, it was just beautifully expansive place with all these beautiful trees, and they had this huge swimming pool that just wound around the whole place. It was like a super swimming pool, and it was real cold water. And people from all over the world were there, from Argentina, from Germany and Holland. And, you know, it was just really, I thought, wow, you know, this is really cool. And then you had to take an HIV test to be tested for that before they let you in. Because I guess people, you know, I mean, in the old days, it was very sexually free.
Were you sexually active in that scene?
No, I wasn't because, you know, I'm not like that.
Mm-hmm. Were people putting pressure on you to be sexually active?
No, and I mean, in the older times when it had first started, it was like just this mecca. And the people of India are very conservative, you know, mm-hmm. and they did not like having it there, having that stuff go on there. Because I guess they'd heard about it, you know, because they would do these meditations. Well, you saw it. Didn't you mm-hmm. watch the show?
Yeah. So when you arrived at Pune, they were just like, before you come in, you have to take an HIV test?
No, when you wanted to join the ashram. Yeah. You had to, you know, pay some money you had to buy clothes. You had to wear a maroon outfit.
Mm-hmm.
Was it an experience that you Alt for Norgad?
Well, it was very low key. And then you took some group meditation things, and people were more into just, you know, doing meditations and doing these kind of weird exercises. But it wasn't, there was no sexual vibe that I was in, but they also had like, they were all self classes where you did self growth, you know. So they were actually, you know, quite good.
So you didn't like just stumble upon some wild like orgy or anything?
No, people were quite well behaved and thoughtful. It wasn't like it wasn't weird like that at all. But I think in the earlier days it had been because now everybody was kind of more older, you know, and the same people those were in it.
Mm-hmm. So they already gotten their wild country out.
Yeah. I think so.
And did you watch the documentary? Have you seen it?
Yeah, I've been watching it. I'm only on the third or fourth season.
Oh, I found it was so captivating because I do remember the story. Like when I was a kid, it was dominated the news cycle for quite a while. And they did such an excellent job because you were just like, who's the enemy here? Is there an enemy? Like, who's at fault? Like, what's going on? Like, it was just... I don't know. It was really bizarre because it was like you were like, well, they're right about this, but they're terrible about this. And then they have the right to do that. But like, do they have a right to do this? You know,
it reminds me of a lot of like when I see drag queens fighting with each other on social media. It is kind of like, you know, these are all these are people who are like live under extenuating circumstances and they're under a lot of pressure to deliver. And that can raise the stakes to the point that they just get on each other's throats. And I imagine that community just was faced with the, you know, an unprecedented moment in history. And, you know, everybody just handled it poorly.
Yeah.
Ironically, they were fighting for peace. They were trying to discover peace. But they were so quarrelsome.
Yes. That Indian woman, she was... kind of pushy, wasn't she?
Oh, totally.
You know, and at the same time, there's, you know, tough titties.
yeah.
She was such a great character.
Yes. That was really a neat story. It was almost like the Odyssey or something, you know?
Do you feel experience with Eastern mysticism influenced your work as an artist? Like the Beatles in some ways?
Well, I just think being open-minded to all things, you know, like when I go to India, you know, I try to do meditation and yoga and from their perspective. And I just think, you know, the more you bring in, the more you can mix it all up and, you know, turn out something somewhat original, you know. And I do have a character who's a new age channeling psycho therapist.
emphasis on the psycho.
Yeah. and she's also a prosperity coach on the side.
I love that.
I could use a prosperity coach.
Well, you know, just walk around the block and say over and over, I am prosperous. I am wealthy. I am abundant. My life is prosperous, wealthy, and abundant. Come on. Prosperous,
wealthy, and abundant.
Money comes to me. Everyone gives me money, and I am a money magnet.
What was the other thing you used to sing all the time that was along that same vein? I'm ready. I'm willing. Oh. What is it?
Oh, I'm alert, I'm awake, I'm aware. I'm alert, I'm how about the one?
Yes, that's the one.
Oh, I'm alert, I'm awake, I'm aware. I'm alert, I'm awake, I'm aware. What's next? What's next? When are we gonna have sex?
I am very attracted to your unconventional singing techniques, Julie.
Well, you know, it was weird. It was like every time they were holding up all these secrets, you know, like not going to tell us where we were going to go for dinner and not going to tell us what hotel we were in. And so always, you know, like, whole, and I'm thinking, well, what's next? Well, when are we going to have some sex? You know, I mean, it was such a sterile environment. Didn't you?
I know.
It was no so hard. Energy. Gravel got underneath your foreskin. Was a saying? Is that a saying in Norway that do you work so hard, gravel gets underneath your foreskin?
I think for that guy, it was. I kind of had a crush on him.
Yeah, Julia's turned on by him.
There's some really hot Norwegian daddies on that show. Yeah.
I used to call that guy that said that. I called him Fish Crotch. Because he had caught fish and had dried them, and he had three pollock fish on a loop on his belt that was hanging next to his crotch, and he would just rip off a piece of this fish and hand it to you, and it was dried fish, and you would just eat it by itself. Yeah,
it was like cat
fish.
Treats. Like cat treats.
It was like cat treats, for sure. Yeah. But he had some heat, and he was definitely like the ringleader or the party master.
Yeah.
Julie, you've got a show coming up in Seattle this Thursday.
Yes.
What
at
is
Beto's.
It? At Beto's.
Beto's. V as in victory. Mm-hmm. And okay. It's on 9th and Madison. And it is starts at 9 o'clock and goes till about midnight.
Cool. And otherwise, people can find you on your website, juliesings.com.
Yes, they can just go there, and then you can find out what else I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you've got some lovely videos on there, and where they can follow you on Facebook for more stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad we got to reconnect with you on this podcast.
Yeah, and also Festa Italiana is coming up on September 30th at the Seattle Center.
Are you going to be in it?
Yes, I'll be there at 2 o'clock on Sunday.
Are you doing yourself or a character?
No, I'm doing my Sicilian character, and her name is Piccolo Fupa.
Piccolo Fupa?
Piccolo Fupa. The
Piccolo Fupa. Yeah, Julie, yeah. I got to know, did you fall in love with Norway?
Yes, I did. And I want to go back there. I think there's something about it. It's calling me.
When are you going to answer the call? And is it a collect?
Well, there's something. It's spiritual, and I don't know what's going to bring me over there. But I am putting it out there. I'm preparing. I'm putting my songs together. And thank you for helping me write a couple Norwegian ditties.
Mm-hmm. Julie, you know, wrap up playing with your "I've Fallen in Love with Norway" single available on iTunes.
Yeah.
Or we don't have to play it.
We have the copy. We have the MP3.
We don't have to play it.
We can play it.
Sure. Why don't you? That'll give people a chance to hear that I really do love to sing.
We did sing it after you left, too. You know, the next
did
episode.
Did anybody?
Did you hear the rapper version? I think Ice-T did a version. Wait, I'm falling in love with Norway with Julie. She sings. She's really wild. She spent some time in the wild country, but now she's done with the Bhagwan's ashram. So she went to Norway, where they eat fish eyeballs and clean latrines and retrace their roots back to Scandinavia.
Yeah, would you guys write me a rap song like that? That's great.
Just transcribe it. Transcribe what I just said.
Well, when are we going to do this podcast thing?
It's now. We just did
this. This is it?
Yeah, we're gonna you know, do a little editing, and it's gonna be up on the internet, and you'll be able to listen to it in about 2 hours from now.
Well, more like 6 hours, but
I just go to Feast of Fund, right?
Yeah. You, available where all podcasts are found. Just search Feast of Fun and hit subscribe, honey. Ooh, it's so good. And delicious. Julie, you may fall in love with Norway, but we fell in love with you. Thank you so much for taking a little time out of your busy, busy schedule, being a very famous singer, to spend time with two schlubs here in Chicago.
Guys are great.
Thank you, Julie. And one more thing. What piece of advice would you give for somebody who is applying for All for Norway? How do you do well on the show?
Well, I think you got to really cut loose and just go, you know, think outside of the box. Mm-hmm. Don't bring your box with you.
Unless it's lubed.
and just, you know, let your freak flag fly, because they need that over there. They are very repressed and controlling. And you got to just go, hey, man, go for your impulses, because that's what they really want. Mm-hmm. And I felt that I was a little conservative. Didn't you think I was?
I think maybe a little bit. You could have been a wilder.
Yeah. Well, remember that international incident in the Indian restaurant in Bergen?
What? What is this?
Oh. I was sitting at the other table. I don't really know what happened, but I know that Julie got locked into the bathroom by mistake or something like that. And then the owner, like the guy who ran the restaurant, was like yelling at Julie, saying that she locked herself in the bathroom on purpose. And then she didn't like her food. And there was a fight between like the chef, who was the owner, and his girlfriend about the food. But then Julie also thinks that they were having some kind of intimate relationship. There was like, I think, a physical altercation between the two of them. And then she just walked out.
I ordered something Indian and it looked tasted like Chinese food. I said, this is not what I want to eat. Mm-hmm. And so then she was Ukrainian and she goes, oh, anything you want, choose anything you want. We get you whatever you want. Forget it. You don't have to eat this. Well, you know, Bausto, they forgot to bring my food. Everybody else was eating except me.
Mm-hmm. Well, listen, if you go to an Indian restaurant and they serve you Chinese, it can't be that far off.
Yeah. Right. But, you know, this white guy was in there, you know, cooking, and he looked like a deer in the headlights. I go, this doesn't even taste like Indian food. I said, get me some of those shrimps, you know. And so I think the guy, he slapped cold cocked her.
Oh, my God. Because she was offering to replace your meal at no cost. Uh-huh. Oh, dear. Yeah. That's not good.
And then I thought, oh, my God, I'm going to get in trouble.
You are a tempest in a teapot.
Well, I was feeling a little cocky because I love Indian food.
Mm, don't we all?
Yeah.
You know, it's a great to do cardio listening to a little bit of classic Bollywood music.
Oh, I bet.
On the Google Play, you can subscribe to the classic Bollywood. 80s Bollywood is really fun.
Okay.
And you can sort of hear the influence influence back and forth of American music and Bollywood music. And it's kind of like interesting to hear another culture interpretation and influence on your own.
Oh.
You know, so they have like their own Michael Jackson.
Oh, yeah.
Which is really kind of cool and weird sounding, you know. It's like, hee-hee-hee, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Shaboom, all that kind of stuff. Julie, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show.
You're welcome. I got to go to the store now.
Okay. I got to go finish this podcast.
Will you say, what a cool, refreshing breeze.
What
a cool, refreshing breeze.
Is that what she said in Bergen?
Something
right?
like that. Yeah.
You're like, I'm just enjoying this nice breeze.
What a cool.
Everybody laughed at that. They just thought it was funny. I'm telling you, baby, you're a star in that show. People absolutely. You need to watch it with a big audience because they laugh at everything you say.
Okay, you know, okay.
They're laughing with you, not at you.
And you will feel the love. You will definitely feel the love.
Okay. And I want to find out who was jealous for me.
They all were. I was jealous.
Mark was jealous.
Fausto was jealous.
I'm not jealous.
I got my wiener joke in. I'm good.
Yeah, you did. Okay.
Yeah, you think it's going to be a bombshell when they reveal that Mark's actually gay, a crossdresser, and married to a guy?
Yeah.
They'll be like, what is this? Oh, my goodness. This show is off the rails. It's like it's like Sex on the Beach, only with Americans.
Yeah. Okay. Well, nice to chat with you guys, too.
Nice vare to bra, vare bra.
Okay.
Bye, darling.
See ya. Barsago.
Barsago.
Julie Siascopo.
Cassiopo.
Cassiopo lives in Seattle, Washington.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
The exotic sound. Seattle, Washington.
And she grew up in the Ballard region, which I think is like a part of Seattle. Mm-hmm. And that's where all the Norwegians are. And they have a huge Set to Mai parade there. The 17th of May, their national parade of Norway. They have a huge parade there. I think it's probably the biggest one outside of Norway.
So Set to Mai is like the Cinco de Mayo for Norwegians, yes. Only there's less beer or more beer.
A different kind of beer. It's well, Cinco de Mayo, I think, is, you know, that's a what they call
it's an imported holiday that doesn't really exist.
It's a holiday, but it's not a huge holiday in Mexico.
No,
right?
it's
it's a drinking holiday. But
here it's like, you know, all the liquor, Mexican liquor companies and beers all sort of build it up because it's a good excuse to drink, you know, Dos Equis or Coronas and stuff like that.
The 17th of May is their Constitution Day, so it's the day they got their Constitution. So they celebrate, and it's, you know, it's people march in parades, but it's all much more dignified than, like, let's say, you know, a gay pride parade or even like the 4th of July. Parade. People parade in their suits and their brunades and the traditional costumes.
So far we've seen in the episodes that a lot of eliminations are based on this strange low budget Jeopardy game where they have a picture of something.
The puzzle quiz board.
Mm-hmm. And I can't ask you if we're going to see more of that, but I'm just kind of like going, it's like Alex Trebek somewhere is going, where's my cut?
Well, you know, listen, Jeopardy's been around for a long, long time.
Yeah, yeah. And so certainly like the, so we had, you know, a troll doll and a paintbrush. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, like you're watching this in the comfort of your own home and just kind of like, you know, all reality TV shows or game shows, you're like, it's easier to guess the answer when you're not under pressure.
Certainly.
I've certainly sat and watched Jeopardy with you and you get the answer right. And you go like, that money belongs to me. you actually were in that situation.
I was in the first elimination.
You were in the room when the other thing happened. And you were saying that you actually guessed it pretty early on, the second puzzle.
I kind of knew going into the first puzzle what I thought it would be. I thought it was going to be a troll doll because I was like, well, it's got to be something kind of Norwegian. And we dealt with a troll doll. So that was the top of my list. And when they revealed the first one, I saw the hair and I'm like, okay, that could be troll hair, but that could be like a sheep thing. And then they showed an eye, you know, when we got to like an eyeball, I was like, that looks like a troll alibi, but maybe what if it's a puffin? You know what I mean? And then, but then it was like, I was like, no, it's a troll doll.
It really ugly puffin.
And it really, well, you just saw the eyeball and it was just big.
But you
guy,
saw
you know,
all this crotch hair poking from the side and you're like, this gotta be a goat or something.
You know, but then I thought, well, maybe it looks like it's something that looks like a troll that they think, or they want us to say it's a troll to screw us up. But now the one that she did, I was like, I knew very early on what it was. And I was really surprised at how difficult it was for them to realize for all the people that, you know, got it wrong.
Sure.
You know, it's
just, so in being in the hot seat versus observing it in the same room,
it's much easier to just stand there and watch it happening rather than to actually have to participate in it. Cause it's, you know, it's nerve wracking. Your hopes and dreams are pinned on this competition and you just don't want to see, like, you know, your hopes crushed.
Well, regardless of whether you win or lose, you're a winner in my heart and our audience hearts.
I appreciate that.
And, you know, it's a testament because of you fabulous listeners. This is why we're able to do Feast of Fun. If you're considered becoming a member and supporting our podcast, go to feastoffun.com/plus and upgrade your account today and access 14 years of amazing podcasts.
Another great way to support the podcast is to make a one-time donation. You can do that at feastoffun.com/donate or visit our store at feastoffun.com/store.
And we love doing live podcasts on location. If your club or Norwegian embassy or museum would like for us to do a live screening of Alt for Norge, I'd be happy to moderate it, and I'll ask really awesome questions.
Yay!
We'll come anywhere. Welcome in. Just contact us at mail@feastoffun.com. I want to thank you guys so much for tuning in. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
How do you say goodbye in Norwegian?
Farvel.
Farvel.
Mm-hmm. A lot of it's kind of the same, but just look a little different.
Just like everything else.
Everything else.
I'm open to falling in love in Norway. It's such an astonishing place. I'm open to falling in love in Norway. A smile's frozen on my face. I'll see how it feels to climb fjords in high heels while I munch pickled herring and eels. Friends won't believe it, but I'll never leave it, even if Trump gives me one of his deals. I'm open to falling in love in Norway with a fisherman and his strong hands, or a farmer, a milkman, or even a hitman, as long as he lives in Norseland. We'll sip aquavit in our Nordic retreat and reflect on the midnight sun. I'll write in my journal and savor each kernel of the fun with my one special one. I'm open to falling in love in Norway. Let this be my final wish. Learn how to make my grandma's romagrat and share with everyone a small dish. Drink champagne by cases in dazzling places. Some things cannot be replaced. And a man with a milk mustache on his face. Some things cannot be replaced. And a man with a milk mustache on his face. Oof da Albert, you're da livin' end.